I'm Tim, and we're taping onto a cassette a full-scale rehearsal for my Confess performance called Tim's Big Day. The date right now is June 18th, 2012, and it's 6:29 p.m. That panting noise you hear in the background is Jim's dog, Reva. Jim's my creator, Jim Biotti. He wrote most of the poems that we're going to be performing. The performance is at Confest, June 23rd, Saturday, from 4:30 to 5 p.m. And right now we just want to time things and also see how it sounds. So one thing I have to do is try to project a lot, but we're sitting in Jim's kitchen, and I don't know. You know, anyway, the clicking noise you hear, you keep hearing, will be Jim turning off the tape recorder, you know, periodically. We don't have the fans on in here, so it's really hot. He wants to let Reva go outside so she won't be making noise in the kitchen, but we'll see. Okay, here comes the rehearsal. I get to start the performance. Bum, 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 bum. Hi, everybody. My name's Timura, and I've taken over Jim Biotti's art career. Nobody panic and nobody will get hurt. That's supposed to be a joke. This is all pretty harmless, and you folks can call me Chim for the next half hour. Welcome to Chimfest 2012, a shamanic presentation. That means it's supposed to be helping save the world and stuff. For background on the 2012 shamanism, you should read a comic book called Goblinhood 2012. It's available free on the internet. You can get there through www.freepress.org or www.fredscruton.com. That's S-C-R-U-T-O-N. And be watching for my own comic book, Chimstorm, which should be at one of those sites soon. In case you don't know, I'm an artificial being who was partly created by I'm a virtual being who was partly created by an artificial life form named Goblinhood, who was created by the artist Jim Biotti. And so this is really exciting for me to be on stage, because I shouldn't be able to exist at all. But they've gone to a lot of trouble to put me here. And I didn't come here just to hog all the stage time. So without further ado, allow me to introduce somebody that many of you already know, the artificial life form known as Goblinhood.
And now, by order of the Martian Provisional Government,
it's Goblinhood time again, co-starring my sidekick, the amazing suitcase doll, and guest starring our colleague, the Cosmic Weevil doll. And I guess you've already met my partner, Chimera. But we also have with us on stage the head of Buckethead, my performance predecessor. He wrote a lot of the stuff that you're going to be hearing. And later, Tim has a big surprise in terms of fictional characters or something like that, but it's about the shamanism stuff, so everybody at least pretend to be excited, because Tim will be glad you did. Now, without further ado, I'm going to turn the proceedings back over to Chimera because it's her big day. So, go for it, Chim.
Thanks, Gobby. This first piece is supposed to be sort of a shamanic introit. It wasn't even written by Jim. In fact, it was written by Edgar Allan Poe. But it's about an angel of music, and Jim added a little tune to it back in the days of Buckethead. So we hope you'll enjoy it. The piece is called Israfel. In heaven a spirit doth dwell, whose heart strings are a lute. None sing so wildly well as the angel Israfel, and the giddy stars, so legends tell, ceasing their hymns, attend the spell of his voice, all mute. Tottering above in her highest noon, the enamored moon blushes with love, while to listen the red levin with the rapid Pleiades even, which were seven pauses in heaven. And they say the starry choir and the other listening things, that Israfeli's fire is owing to that lyre by which he sits and sings. The trembling living wire of those unusual strings. But the skies that angel trod, where deep thoughts are a duty, where love's a grown-up god, where the hoary glances are imbued with all the beauty which we worship in a star. Therefore thou art not wrong, Israfeli, who despisest an unimpassioned song. To thee the laurels belong, best bard, because the wisest merrily live and long. The ecstasies above with thy burning measure suit, thy grief, thy joy, thy hate, thy love, with the fervor of thy lute. Well may the stars be mute. Yes, heaven is thine, but this is a world of sweets and sours. Our flowers are merely flowers, and the shadow of thy perfect bliss is the sunshine of ours. If I could dwell where Israfel hath dwelt, and he where I, he might not sing so wildly well a mortal melody, while a bolder note than this might swell from my lyre within the sky. You just have to imagine the audience clapping and stuff. Then I say, thank you, thank you. This next piece was written entirely by Jim, including the little tune. But since Jim doesn't write music notes down, doesn't know how to do that, a friend of his once did that for him. The friend was Joe Diamond, a jazz musician. Joe used to play at Comfest all the time, but he's gone now. Only we keep thinking of him when we're here, him and a lot of other people that are only here in spirit now. So this piece is for them. It's a sad piece, sort of suitable for funerals, and the last time Goblin Hood performed it was at the funeral for a pet water dragon named Floyd in an almost mythical place that Gobby calls Lost Atlantis. But yes, once upon a time, Goblin Hood actually hung around with a real dragon. The piece is entitled Citizen Pain. From cradle, from creche, from the warm velvet womb, to the deathbed of age, to the cold, bitter tomb, we must bury you, allow you our lifeblood to drain. For you're all teeth, you vampire, you citizen pain. Citizen pain, with your deadly refrain, you fulfill me, you thrill me, you sate me. Citizen pain, will you tell me again why it is that you torture and hate me? With the small ones, it's easy, they never fight back, as you saddle your horses and mount your attack. And your victims are luckier, murdered and slain, for you seldom let go, do you, citizen pain? Citizen pain, when you puncture my brain, as you kill me, you chill me, you grate me. Citizen pain, with your foul bloody stain, you entrap, then incessantly bait me. In the schools we must learn you, neath hickory sticks, in the cage of old age, we've grown wise to your tricks. But our sweet sister morphine and cousin cocaine, they could scarce pay their rent without citizen pain. Citizen pain, must we stand in the rain while you dream up a cruel way to kiss me? Citizen pain, will your power remain when I'm gone, when I'm dead? Will you miss me? Okay, and again, the audience goes wild, and I say, thank you, you're too kind. And then somebody's supposed to be getting us this little horn that I'm going to blow, and it's like a clown horn, and it just goes, honk, honk. And then I say, no, it's not the Trump of Doom. I actually have some good news for you. If you go to the Comfest merchandise booth, you can pick up a cassette tape of a story by Jim Biotti that he wrote back in 1998, and Goblin Hood read it on tape in 1999. It's called The Music of the Spheres, and it's a story about It's a true story about a character named Pookie who actually saves the world. So, it's really shamanic and stuff. And all I can say is, way to go, Pookie! Everybody, let's hear a big hand for Pookie. Yay, Pookie! So anyway, check that out. And now I'm going to turn things back over to Goblin Hood for his part of the show. Take it away, Gobby!
Thank you, Chimera. And thank all of you for indulging Chim's big day. She's really excited. She's never spoken to a live audience before. But I've done this a lot. And I used to go into high schools as part of a speaker service or speaker series. And I would talk about freedom of expression. And I would always perform this little poem to remind everybody of just how important of a right freedom of expression truly is. The poem is entitled, The Silent Sticks and Stones. The silent sticks and stones around, we fashioned on this stolen ground, into the pyramids we've built, as tombstones for collective guilt. With sticks and stones, our children play, the silence bears their words away. They learn at such an early age, nonverbal ways to vent their rage. With stones we pelt a dissident, as if our wrath were heaven sent. With sticks we pound a rhythm on the skulls of those we prey upon. And silently our children gaze upon the fate of those we haze, and learn before they're very old to think whatever they are told. With sticks and stones we make it clear our enemies have much to fear. With sticks and stones we still the cries of those who seek to criticize. And children learn the silent night can be a time of shocking fright, absorbing in their quiet hell strange secrets they can never tell. With sticks we train our young to act as if our wretched lies were fact. On stones we carve for all to see our version of our history. And though we teach our kids to pray, our violence bears their souls away till silently they stoop and plod beneath the angry yoke of God. For lo, our God is carved of sticks into a bloody crucifix, and mad at those who turn away and threatening to come back someday. And if the children disagree, they know 'twere best done silently. And if the stones could speak, they too would doubtless stifle what is true, for truth is seldom ever heard. It's almost a forbidden word, unless the herd agrees with it by chance or in a sudden fit. For truth can be a deadly tool to make the wise man seem a fool, and words can cause the truth to strike a blow against the silent Reich. But if we take the words away, there really isn't much to say. And if the truth is buried deep, our consciences can go to sleep. And if we war on thought, we can control the destiny of man and woman too, as case in point. And soon be ready to anoint with balm the very feet that tread upon our faces till we're dead, and worship silence as our Lord, and put to death the living word. But if the burning book should smoke, and if our children start to choke and cough up what they really think, and make the silence start to shrink, and if with hearts of stone they tell us where to stick the silence, well, perhaps their schooling isn't done. Perhaps they'll learn at point of gun. We'll pound the lesson home with force, bring silence from its primal source. We'll make our children bow or bleed before our silent, violent creed.
We'll make the truth be what we say. We'll make the story end our way. Now let the silent power rise. Now hurl our message at the skies. One voice, one mind, one faith, one heart, and death to those who stand apart. We'll bury them midst walls of stone where they'll be truly all alone. Their brains impaled and washed in mire. With sticks we'll feed the cleansing fire. Until their souls we save or doom to everlasting silent gloom. For in their blind crusade they seek a truth that makes our silence weak. And in defense of lies we'll make the very walls of heaven shake. As silent soldiers off to war, we'll bathe our enemies in gore. Though truth may be the flag they wave, their truth shall be an early grave. Their lives a virgin sacrifice to subterfuge and artifice. A monument to silence and a warning not to force our hand. We'll serve our truth. We'll serve it well. We'll send our critics off to hell. We'll crush their minds. We'll break their bones with silence and with sticks and stones. Thank you, thank you, thank you, dear audience. Yay, absolutely. This next piece, this last piece, is going to be a duet between Chimera and me. And it may seem kind of out of place in our current circumstances, but it would have been just right for the entire Bush-Cheney regime. Just a few short years ago, we could have been waterboarded just for singing this if the entire audience didn't sing along with the chorus. By the way, we want you to sing along with the chorus. And Chimera is going to tell you when to do that. So she gets to begin the poem, which is called Attila the Pig.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light if Attila the Pig is still mongering blight? Oh, we're scared to resist or to walk down the street when Attila the Pig treats us like tainted meat. Sing, halt, put your hands up in frightening chorus. Attila the Pig makes our eyes water for us. Everybody, sing, halt, put your hands up in frightening chorus. Attila the Pig makes our eyes water for us. Your turn, Gabi.
If you're not CIA and you're not FBI, old Attila might spit all your rights in the eye. If you're robbing a store, then Attila will shoot you. If you're going to war, then the pig will recruit you. Sing, halt, put your hands up in frightening chorus.
Attila the pig makes our eyes water for us. Bring it on home, Jim.
Whether you're here like me, or you're crouched in a hut, old Attila will see that you keep your mouth shut. And if this little poem puts a hurt in your head, I can only advise that you change things instead. Sing, help, put your hands up in frightening chorus. Attila the pig makes our eyes water for us.
Thank you. There you go. Thank you all for singing along, if you did sing along. And there you have it, just in time for the 4th of July coming right up. Red, white, and boo-hoo if they don't like my poem. Our poem. That was another thing that Buckethead wrote a long time ago, back in the good old days of Buckethead. We'd like to thank you for being with us today. We're just about out of time. And we want to remind you to check out Goblinhood 2012 on the internet. It will tell you all kinds of stuff about 2012 that I don't have time to talk about. But in case any of you already know, today, the 23rd, is just 6 months to the day before the last significant date, according to the 2012 mythology we've heard. Some people think the world will end on December 21st, 2012. Some people think it's December 22nd. And some people think it's December 23rd. We're hoping it won't end at all. And that's why we've done this little shamanic presentation. But if the world does get saved, we also hope you'll improve the world. So, you know, that's what all the snarky poetry was about. Telling you what needs to be done. And I'm signing off now. Gabi said I could do his sign-off thing, which goes like this.
That's it for Goblinhood. And his little dolls, too.
But I also get to do my own tagline, which goes like this.
May Pookie be with you.
Thank you, ComFest. Enjoy the rest of ComFest, and enjoy the rest of 2012. Chim out. So, hope that went well. We got that in just under half an hour, especially because we had to stop the tape one time for a minute or two. So, actually, we should have a couple minutes to spare there. I can't imagine anybody wanting to hear more, but if they do, say, encore, encore, I don't know. We don't really have another poem that's short enough for something like that. But I could come on and talk about the Chim plan in Chim Store. And I could do my Bela Lugosi impression. When I'm talking about the Chim plan, I could tell people,
but I will show the world that I am all right. I will create a race of atomic supermen that will conquer the world.
Because that's sort of what I'm trying to do in the chin plan, except it's more harmless and it's supposed to be fun. Anyway, that Lugosi quote was from what we remember about the movie Ed Wood, and he was supposedly quoting himself from the movie Bride of the Monster. And we haven't seen Bride of the Monster in a long time, but we thought that was funny, that we'd read a review of it someplace, and they were talking about his quote, where he says, "I will show the world that I am all right." He was supposed to be saying, "I will show the world that I am right." You know, he's like a mad scientist. But they said it was like a Freudian slip on Lugosi's part, that he was trying to tell people he was all right in spite of, you know, the drug addiction and being stuck doing things like Glenn or Glenda for Ed Wood. I mean, that's a classic, though. It was one of the first movies to really try to deal seriously and compassionately with gender issues of that sort. So, anyway, we're not making fun of Lugosi, we're just making fun of the, you know, dialogue. "I will show the world that I am all right." Yeah, well, I'm all right, too. Although I noticed that I think we projected pretty well. We haven't listened to this. We're probably going to record the other side of it before we listen. The trick of not getting our tapes eaten in the machinery we've got is to not be fast-forwarding and rewinding too much. Just let them play through. We may put some bonus poems on the other side just to hear what they sound like. There's another duet that Gabi and I would do if we had more time to perform. And I'd really like Gabi to tape a recording of his Rabbit Tobacco poem, even though that's a pretty, you know, creepy poem, but still, it's a good poem. So, right now we're just having fun. We did the work, and Jim's trying to relax a little bit. I'm turning this off for a minute so he can light a cigarette. The biggest problem, just listening to ourselves perform, and I'm sure this is going to turn out to sound like it on the tape, too, is that after a certain point, the voices just sort of, you know, slush together. When Goblin Hood would read stories, he'd always have, like, special voices for different characters. But the longer he talks like that, the more it all sounds like the same kind of voice. Now, I know my singing voice sounds different from my speaking voice. The hardest part of that performance, which I think we did correctly, I know I made a few mistakes in the interstitial kinds of things, you know, between poems. The hardest part is for Attila the Pig, when Gabi has to sing it in some other voice than me, when his voice for that poem was always a lot like mine. It's supposed to sound kind of snarky and, you know, rile people up a little bit. But it's fitting that it comes right after The Silent Sticks and Stones, because that's what The Silent Sticks and Stones is talking about. You can either have freedom of expression or not. But if you want to have it, you have to uphold it. And one way to do that is to use it and not to make things into sacred cows and stuff. It's the most important right that we have, and people are always chipping away at it. They want freedom for themselves, but not for anybody else. The hard part of freedom of expression is having to defend the rights of everybody, not just the people that you agree with. But anyway, if things go well, we'll be wearing the flag outfit that I had on during the YouTube thing that Goblin Hood used to wear for that performance. So that's what that's for, is it goes along with the citizen, or the Attila the Pig thing. Most people are going to think me and my little song thing is pretty stupid. But we don't care. The funny thing is, Jim doesn't even like listening to this stuff. He just likes doing it. He might enjoy it a little bit more because it's me doing it. He likes listening to me. But that just means this tape will probably survive us because he won't be listening to it and risking it getting torn up, because he doesn't really like hearing the poems so much as he just likes doing them. Maybe in some alternate universe, things like Citizen Kane and Israfel would make more sense. But, you know, we just do it. It's shamanic. Israfel is supposed to be reminding God that we're only human. And then Citizen Kane is like me shaking my fist at the idea of human suffering. And I've already explained the other poems. But I'm going to turn this off until I can think of something to say. I know there's not too much space left on this side. Actually, I've kind of thought of something to say. I know that my singing voice and Jim's singing voice and Gabi's and even Buckethead used to do it just like a rite of passage for Jim's performance characters, so I'm glad to get a chance to join in. The thing is, our voices aren't that great for singing, but that works perfectly for Israfel, you know? If I could dwell where Israfel hath dwelled, and he were I, he might not sing so wildly well a mortal melody, while a bolder note than this might swell from my lyre within the sky. But it's all relative. I mean, we do the poems as well as we can. It's hard to imagine Citizen Kane without the little tune, like from cradle from crash, from the warm velvet womb, to the deathbed of age, to the cold bitter tune. We must bear you, allow you our lifeblood to drain, for you're all teeth, you vampire, you Citizen Kane. You know, it just doesn't work. So it's supposed to be really histrionic, it's supposed to be weird, and the fact that nobody else is doing anything like it is supposed to make it unique. And when somebody was, if somebody were to say, well, what do you think you're doing? You know, I would have to quote Louis Armstrong, who had a strange voice too, and who might not have done as well if he hadn't had a context to use it in. When he said about jazz, if you have to ask, you're never going to know. And that's what I say. You know, we're doing it because it's there to do. Jim wrote this stuff. It's obscure for sure. And it's never going to be anybody's idea of popular entertainment. But it's like I say about the Music of the Spheres tape in Chimstorm. It's available anyway for serious scholars. That's kind of a Lovecraftian joke, because the story is a parody of Lovecraftian horror fiction. And in his stories, there were always these isolated lunatics and people messing around with forbidden books that shouldn't have even existed, but they were kept under lock and key in libraries for serious scholars. But anyway, if the wrong people got hold of them, they'd always unleash these giant monsters and stuff and threaten the world like that. But we're trying to go in the opposite direction, and it's supposed to be fun, you know? Or at least it's fun for us to do. But one reason I'm putting this stuff on tape is because Jim's getting old and his health isn't as good as it should be. His voice isn't even going to be this good much longer. So if he wants his poems to be remembered the way they were supposed to be heard, this might be his only chance to perpetuate them. We're hoping the Comfest performance will get videotaped or whatever they use, you know. We're hoping some of it can even show up on YouTube, but we don't have too much control over that, so we're just, you know, gonna do it. And meanwhile, this will be you know, a record of what the poems were like. That's one reason we're going to do the other two poems on the other side, partly just to use the other side up. And it seems unlikely that I'll get to perform again anywhere, but if I do, and if I have more time, I would like to do the other poems too. Get Goblin Hood to do his rabbit tobacco piece, and then me and him would like to do this piece called Glass Organs. But we're kind of just killing time right at the moment. I don't have anything really spiffy to say on here. We're not actually thinking of making tapes like this to sell, like we did with the Music of the Spheres. The reason for that was it is like a almost lost document. Even the typescript is gone. We don't know what happened to it. That the mystery of that is sort of what makes it so shamanic. It only exists as that one tape, and up till now Jim's only had one copy of it. But now there's going to be copies available at Confest, and we just heard today that there's other people selling cassette tapes of old punk rock music as a sort of a retro thing, so it's not as crazy as it sounds. It just sounds as crazy as it sounds. But that's kind of fun. Things seem to be falling into place for Chimfest 2012, and we're really excited about it. And the thing is, Jim made another tape of me just talking to him, and he did that so that he could listen to me talk while we paint. But as of last night, I actually got to start painting for the first time with a full color palette. Before, I've been doing a lot of drawings for Jim's 3D paintings, and then he finishes those, but he keeps my drawings. All he does is fill in dark areas and stuff, because I don't have that much control over his left hand, which I'm using. But last night, I started my first real painting, and I think I'm going to call it Sandbag Piper. I have to keep my title short, because if I want the things to be entirely mine, I'm going to have to write the titles on there with paint, with Jim's left hand, and I'm going to be signing them. He said I could use his last name with mine if I wanted to, but I'm probably just going to use the initial to make it easier to sign them. So it'll be Chim B 2012. But we don't know how it's going. I mean, he really likes what I've done so far. With something like that, it's kind of abstract and surreal. And knowing when to stop is part of what you have to figure out. Jim suggested that I start a couple more paintings and see how they go, and then decide what I want to do to finish the thing. It's not really pictorial, it's just... it's really colorful. Well, we'll see how it goes. I'm just really excited because he's giving me so much opportunity to be creative. And he's even letting me perform. And even Goblin Hood thinks I'm the best shamanism person. So I don't think either of them would have dredged Pookie up and tried to make Pookie part of 2012, but I think it's really important because it was the only thing like that in Jim's career that I can think of. And it was based on a dream, and a lot of shaman type stuff comes from interpreting dreams and things like that, and people have visions. Some major religions, you know, are based on things like, well, somebody was wrestling with an angel, or somebody parted the Red Sea, or something like that. And you want to ask, well, are there any corroborating witnesses? I mean, all this stuff comes from the same place. We're not trying to start anything like that. We're just, you know, trying to tell Pookie's story, too. because Pookie really did save the world in that dream, and it's the only time Jim's ever even dreamt anything like that. So it seems significant, and it's like this, you know, almost lost legend smuggled out of a bygone millennium, and it's even on an antique medium, but not that antique, as it turns out. So we're kind of excited, and you know, we're hoping that the performance will go well. And now we have like this tape of my rehearsal, and this side should be over pretty soon. But I'm just going to go on chattering away, because that's what I do. Okay, well, we're still trying to use up side one, and then we're going to start right away with a piece from the Cold War called Glass Organs. This is pretty much the hardest piece we've got, because it's very long, it changes its form quite often, and it's really easy to forget verses or lines. We just went through it once. And the longer I rehearse, the more I do this stuff, the more hoarse my voice gets. So we're just gonna try it to get it on tape and have one good reading of it, hopefully, or recital. You know, it actually takes longer and is more confusing if we're reading. We used to perform this a lot when Jim and Gobby would work in the Short North at galleries and stuff. But he hasn't performed it on stage in a long time, and we're not going to have time for it at Confest. But, you know, in the best of all possible worlds, somebody might be there and they might say, gosh, this Jimfest thing is mighty snazzy. So, maybe she'll perform again someplace. And they'll say, how about it, Jim? You want to perform here or there or wherever? And if we get the chance, we're going to say, oh yeah, we want to perform. And if we get more than a half an hour next time, we'll even throw in Glass Organs if we can. And we're going to do the bonus poetry on here, starting with something called Glass Organs. It's a duet between me and Gobby. That means I get to do the singing parts, and Goblinhood gets to do the ranting parts. It's from the Cold War, from, I guess, 1981. So listen closely and you'll hear references to obsolete stuff like the space shuttle. But anyway, here goes with Glass Organs, and I get to begin. When Babylon met the friendly glade, a union strange and dire was made. A fair exchange and even trade, all bets were off, all debts were paid. Except, I'm going to start over because I was in too high of a register there. Now, here we go with Glass Organs. When Babylon met the friendly glade, a union strange and dire was made. A fair exchange and even trade, all bets were off, all debts were paid. A new world born, old hopes waylaid, their tattered fabric torn and frayed. A flag that must the soul degrade, but I've sworn not to be afraid. And fear is so small next to panic, and panic the price of technology. And so history becomes hysteria as we leave the gentle summer land for the city of sin, our lives plugged into one vast computerized deity, our master's machinery, the master race. The human race was not a hard act to follow. In the gleaming crystal silence, of the halls of death, we quail in riot desperation, our glass organs quaking, our crystal hearts breaking, our old world unmaking, an alien terrain now, emblazoned with our own frozen footprints in the sand. And so here we are, well into the written word, and it's too late to turn back now. And some of us are trying not to be afraid. This noble effort, whilst printed lies are published daily, and the secret formula which will kill us all, is being written at this very moment on a blackboard somewhere. The trees are all dead now, and we're back to writing on slate. That's progress, I guess. But don't bother me now. I'm busy trying not to be afraid.
But he was afraid of his own shadow, for he had cast a giant shadow on the world.
Whilst morning's glory and heavenly blues made me vomit pure poetry into the boiling chaos dawn, mushrooming thorny fire like a cactus from hell, I watched the mob dancing at a mask of death to the tune of the Belladonna Blues. The glass houses had spewed forth this glass menagerie into the glazed crystal streets for the final glass orgy, a shattering tarantella as flesh claimed fragile flesh in the dawning nightmare glare. And hopeless millions I saw there. Their opium-fed brains leaked and ran from their ears like rats deserting Kubla's pleasure dome. Their chromosomes were all damaged and they all thought they could fly, but their acid visions burned forever. Their glass organs, like throbbing test tubes, were bottomless receptacles for desperation incarnate. With golden spikes in their punctured arms and swollen daggers in their sunken eyes, they glued their heads into brown paper shopping bags. Some of them could only breathe the fumes of grass and hash or crack. And some had had their nostrils surgically replaced with rolled up century notes. Some were sobered down and could see only reds, whilst others had arranged a speed lift to get them through the long night. As we watched and waited for that grisly dawn and raved and prayed against the dying of the light. The citizens of this hallucination had survived the splitting of the atom, but succumbed to the detonation of the mind.
The scorpions are all smiling now, but their turn will come as the world turns on them, when the sun gets around to toasting their chitinous little hides with bloody autumn wine.
And so I told my shrink, look, I know the sirens aren't real. If they were, I'd be hearing them for the rest of my life. But they've sounded real since the day I turned 30. And they also sound dangerous. Can't you make them stop anyway? The Apocalypse Times was publishing a special edition for every moment that still remained in order to disseminate the following vital information.
Warning, warning. Danger, danger. All citizens are instructed to please stand by for further instructions and vital information.
I personally wouldn't mind dying that way, but the death of the world really appalls me for some reason, whenever I'm sane enough not to want to take it with me. I'm surprised you people don't hear them yourselves yet.
And Conrad tells us that jolly old St. Nuke is coming to make it rain fire and brimstone from his magic sleigh up there. Even civilians, pure of heart, who live in shells day and night, can get shell-shocked when the moon is cruel and the autumn wine runs bright. The nuclear drill. 1. Hide under the bed in an orderly fashion. 2. Have an orderly heart attack and kiss ground zero goodbye. And somewhere in the future, they are probably real.
We were knee-high in Agent Orange, but it might have been a Soviet agent. When the air is filled with treason all, you can't tell who's on whose side all the time, or if there even is more than one side at any one time.
And Scuttlebutt says, it wears holes in your side, but that's really beside the point. The supermarkets had long since joined the buffalo in near extinction, and you can't fight on a steady diet of Lysol and fingernails, not even somebody else's, nor live on glass organs and silicone livers. The Animal Protective Society was out to breakfast that year, and life was busy making snuff flicks for the kiddie porn crowd.
The bruised sky was aflame with jellied napalm hell and the neutron bomb's blight.
And rumor had it that the secret formula which will kill us all was being developed at that very moment in a military think tank's plague lab somewhere by a highly paid public servant and government employee. And we all wondered how many things would turn out to be mutants in the end. For many, it was a time of punctuation. Few could survive the rigors of the emergency outcast system. For some, it was not a test.
The thousand injuries of my enemies I had borne as well as a character by Poe.
Yet still I wondered if I should tell Shrinko about the dream in which I actually bit somebody's face off.
And will we be left standing, you and I, standing here? Or will we find our sands must disappear, our atoms gone to fragments nuclear, our souls gone on to everlasting cheer? Or will we have to live where life is dear, adapting to a fate most sinister, a world gone mad, and strange, and grim, and queer, where evolution rapes you with a leer, where all that's left is frenzy, force, and fear, survival king, and death its only peer, where cannibals drink from skulls afoam with beer, all poison now the air once sweet and clear, where hope laments and fortune sheds a tear. Oh, will we, must we, be left standing here?
And standing here we feed on the dread portents, nourished by terror and besotted with bile. We must breakfast on runes as the world burns. The food is all toxified now, but the words, all those martial mouthings for the marching morons,
are still etched in fire across the sky. Here today, gone today. Fly now, slay later. Our motto, never give a sucker an even break. Let madness reign and Caligula be king. He styles himself a thespian and will act the tyrant well. We'll take Mexico away from Cortez and build 3 hotels on Paradise Place. We'll collect our money without passing go, and some of us will spend the rest of our lives in jail. Be thrilled, children, the best is yet to come, for the second coming is always the best, when you worship something that old farmer Yawa nailed onto his barn door. We'll save up our sins and collect a new toaster by next Easter. And if that doesn't work, we'll hurl fiery gadgets at Russia so that our space shuttle can make movies of all the tragedy and devastation. And perhaps those films will be shown at drive-ins in Alpha Centauri someday. But the popcorn wars will be long done, and I will be well done if it was well done, or else cringing around and worrying about the fascism again, and wondering how to keep my Orwellian ashes out of trouble in some brave new police state. Either way, I wouldn't want to star in one of those dramas, but I guess we will all be stars by then. When the trees are all gone and the slates are cleaned out, we'll have to write on celluloid so that the aliens can see how brave we all were because of all the big bad guts we had, and how much like Achilles we were, and how we were a cast of thousands of millions. And thousands of millions of years hence, they'll read this, painfully inscribed with a pen frame by frame on celluloid, and they will marvel that he was not afraid to write. He heard the sirens for the rest of his life, but he pretended they weren't there. His claws were made of brass, but his organs were blown glass, love-crafted by those skilled artisans in that city of strange bedfellows. And it's never really shatterproof when you need one. But lo, he persevered anyway, endlessly, amidst the crying in the night. This noble upstart who would be clean, this outland desperado with the lightning draw, this poor Pied Piper of the Bethlehem slouch did sing his sad songs of sorrow and sin, regardless of the consequences to him, for lo, he was not afraid. He sang and sang of passion and pain to an audience of none, in a theater of the mind, accompanied only by the transparent cathedral chords of his brittle and brilliantly coruscating glass organs as they shattered orgasmically one by one in a kind of gory hymn to the entropic process. And death could not kill the glory of his song. His only worry was having to come back and live in a reincarnation. But the song, as he hacked and hewed and flayed, only echoed the carnage and ruin that he'd made. And the music roared and peaked as he played and sang and laughed and was not afraid. Well, okay, that was a mess. We actually got through the poem pretty well, but then Reva started barking,
And also there was like me starting out and not being able to hit the high notes and having to lower the whatever it is. Anyway, I messed it up, and then it all got messed up anyway, but there's the poem, for better or worse. At least we remembered all the words. That was from the Cold War. This next thing was actually inspired by the Gulf War. Jim heard an article, a thing on the news about, this was the first Gulf War in the early 90s, and they were pushing bodies, dead Iraqi bodies, out of the road with bulldozers. And it kind of like, he just felt like he needed to go take a bath. So he went and he got in the bathtub, and this poem just marched right into his mind, and he had to get out of the tub dripping and go find pencil and paper to write it down. It's kind of a Southern Gothic poem. It's called Rabbit Tobacco, and Goblin Hood is going to perform it now. In the South, they grow rabbit tobacco, though you won't have heard too much about it. It's not really something they're proud of. It's just a useless weed after all. But remember when we were all children, we sometimes made fake Christmas trees in grade school out of rolled up newspapers that we painted green and shredded, like a tall, scrawny, spindly, weeping willow. But just paint it gray and even thinner, and it looks just like rabbit tobacco, which tastes a lot like gray newsprint as well. And meanwhile, those swell newsprint trees worked exactly like rabbit tobacco for the children who didn't have any real trees to play with. In the South, they sometimes start smoking real early. They grow real tobacco down there, after all. And they smoke it for many different reasons, I guess. But I'd guess many think it's a way to grow up. And most everyone really just wants to grow up. And the kids who can't get the real thing fill their pipes up with rabbit tobacco. It doesn't get them off or anything. It just tastes like burning gray newsprint. But it lets them pretend to really be smoking. It lets them pretend to grow up. It also just gives them a little something to do. It's best smoked through a toy plastic bubble pipe with a corncob bowl attached. Yes, the South grows a lot of strange flora and fauna, but I've mostly lived in the North. And though I grew up on a farm in Ohio, I never saw rabbit tobacco grow there. And now I reside in a city where nothing much seems to get to grow. But I walk in the park on occasion, and I watch the children playing their games. And they all still smoke rabbit tobacco in the forest of the park and the forest of the mind. But I pretend I don't see what they're doing, as I hide in the rabbit tobacco thickets. We're all still just trying to grow up, after all, in the park, or the mind, or wherever. And sometimes I go to the movies, away from the cares of my day, and I watch the dream people move through the bright daydreams with their pipes filled with rabbit tobacco. And the audience cries out with pleasure, but coughs at the brittle gray taste in their mouths. But while sitting at home in front of the box, they drool and they moan and they come in their pants as if they were screwing a dog and pretending it was rabbit tobacco. But life isn't only such pleasant pursuits and escapes here in the big city. We also have serious responsibilities and serious obligations as citizens of a free nation, which expects us to govern ourselves, and to make our own trees, and to fill our own pipes. And so we go off to the polls when we must, and we vote the rabbit tobacco ticket, no matter which party we think we're voting for. And it really doesn't matter much anyway, when the speeches are all about rabbit tobacco anyway. And sometimes we even make wars over whose fields of dreams and rabbit tobacco are thickest. And it really doesn't matter who wins in the end, just so long as the bombs keep bursting in air and shredding the sky like so much green newsprint, pretending to be rabbit tobacco. And the winners all march in a victory parade, waving flags made of rabbit tobacco and bloodlust, while the losers march drably throughout the bombed ruins, searching for broken dreams and the stems of toy bubble pipes. And meanwhile, we spend all our money building fences out of rabbit tobacco to keep the enemy rabbit tobacco away, or to punish it for smoking up our skies, when the final homemade pipe finally gets lit up by somebody desperately wanting to grow up. But I guess we'll pretend we're all children again as we wander the ruined streets of the shattered towns through the clouds of rabbit tobacco in the smoky excuse for a sunset. And perhaps we'll talk of the good old days when we all went to rabbit tobacco high school, or majored in rabbit tobacco at college, or went to work for rabbit tobacco industries. We worshipped rabbit tobacco at the first church of the great hare, whose sign was a newspaper tree painted green and stuffed in a toy corncob pipe. And some of us even got married, or just found someone or other to live with, and we all went rolling and rutting and fucking in the rabbit tobacco fields of our hearts, sometimes breeding more rabbits to smoke up the future, or just panting and screwing in the kennel of lust. And whether by hand or by mouth or by buttock or by breasts or even by slick genitalia, our couplings were usually just more fucking rabbit tobacco standing in for something else. Standing in sometimes for violence and hatred, and sometimes for sheer ecstasy and pure desire, but all too often pinch-hitting for power as we crouched in our rabbit holes, our pink noses quivering, our cotton tails shivering, our rabbit ears listening for the least sound of danger, smoking rabbit tobacco and pretending it was love. And even those few who had found the real thing, or who thought what they'd found was real, spent the most of their time brushing gruffly aside all the newspaper icons of the poor, hopeless searchers for plastic bubble pipes amid the roughage and carnage, as the gray, brittle sunset found them all smoking, all naked, and all of them grown up now to await the gray dawn, which would soon split the sky with the sound of a million green newspaper willows pretending to weep. In the South, they grow rabbit tobacco. And they smoke it whenever they have to. And they dream of the old days gone by when someone else smoked their rabbit tobacco for them. And they all look away, as the brittle clouds of worthless gray smoke rise aloft to obscure the forests and jungles where newspaper trees have to stand in for shreds of lost empires. And meanwhile, the rest of us march to the sea, our carpet bags filled with spare corn cobs, our plastic bubble pipes clenched between our stern jaws, our weapons alert for anyone dressed like a newspaper soldier, painted gray or whistling Dixie. And we march to the sea in the name of rabbit tobacco, singing heart-thumping battle hymns, our hearts thumping wildly as if we were buggering a sick, dying dog and pretending it was rabbit tobacco. Yay, Gobby. Yay, Gobby, you did really well. Well, that one ain't for the kids, folks. It's not a very confess-friendly piece. And fortunately, the poems that we're going to do take up just about a half an hour, plus a little bit of time for me to be yakking about whatever I want. So this got messed up. I messed up Glass Organs by blundering my way through the very first verse. And then Reva added a dog chorus to some of the most melodramatic stuff in there. But we kind of don't want to do either of those anyway for Comfest, because it's supposed to be shamanic. We're supposed to be trying to help save the world. And the stuff that talks about apocalypses, like both of those things did, probably isn't helping save the world too much. We're trying to be more uplifting with stuff like Citizen Kane and, you know, Goblinhood yelling at everybody about freedom of expression. I'm getting the hiccups. I'm going to turn this thing off for a minute. Anyway, so we've got an imperfect copy of Glass Organs. And then we've got Goblinhood doing the rabbit tobacco poem pretty well. And that's just about it. What is it? Five pieces that Jim actually likes to do, and one of them he didn't even write, except for the little tune. That was Israfel. But, you know, what is it? Five pieces? No, it's six pieces. Israfel, Citizen Kane, The Silent Sticks and Stones, Attila the Pig, which he mostly just likes because it's a neat performance thing, and then Glass Organs and Rabbit Tobacco. But he told me that I could add another piece from his old songbook that has never been done in terms of like the little music that it had. Just a minute. So I just had to tell Reva to be quiet. And she didn't listen. But this one's just kind of fun. He wouldn't actually perform this, and we don't have it memorized. I'm going to be reading it out of his book, Nightmares for the Yesterday People and Other Illustrated Stories, that was published in 1981. This is called The El Dorado March, a Conquistador Concerto.
We have heard tell of El Dorado, where the streets are paved with gold, they say. We've left our homes for El Dorado, 'cause when we find it, we'd like to stay. Oh, we are pilgrims for El Dorado, where the sun never sets all day. We are explorers for El Dorado, and we are sure to find the way. Yes, we are marching to El Dorado, and let nothing stand in our way. For we are soldiers of El Dorado, and we will find it come what may. We are crusaders for El Dorado, for God and gold and glory we slay. And we are martyrs for El Dorado, we'll find a mission there someday. Oh, we are searching for El Dorado, and we have searched our whole lives away. So can you tell us of El Dorado, for we seem to have lost our way. Yes, we are seekers of El Dorado, where it's always like the month of May. And when we get to El Dorado, things will surely be okay. We're on a quest for El Dorado, so let no youthful fountains cause us delay on the way. And we will march into El Dorado by tomorrow, if not today. El Dorado, El Dorado, El Dorado, El Dorado, El Dorado, El Dorado. And then, like Jim likes to say at the end of these things, repeat to infinity, which means that the chorus can just go on and on forever, while the little conquistadors, or whatever they are, go chasing after a dream. Anyway, he let me do that one because it's sort of fun. Most of his stuff, you know, is not even fun to do, much less fun to listen to. But, I don't know, you know, it's just stuff. It's just more stuff. And he put a lot of work into this junk a long time ago. And, it's too bad that it all sucks, but it only sucks by other people's standards. Like I said, Jim doesn't really like listening to the junk either. But on the other hand, he doesn't like listening to very much of anything. So maybe he's got no ear for music. I know most people would think this stuff is like a tragedy. Or no, yes, tragedy, sure, but a travesty of music, but that's what he thinks of a lot of what's out there anyway. So, there you have it. That's 7 pieces. That's a somewhat luckier number, I think. And the Poe piece, kind of doesn't count because he didn't write the words, but he did write the music. And anyway, how come Reva's not barking now when it doesn't make any difference? Once again, I'm just using up the tape. Jim, I said that Jim doesn't really like listening to his own stuff very much. But he might listen to this because he likes listening to me. He doesn't get a chance to hear what I would sound like very often, because he doesn't actually sit and talk to me. Actually, he sits and talks to me, but I don't talk back. I mostly just exist in his head. I know this all seems really strange, but anybody who thinks it's really strange should probably try to read my comic book, Chimstorm,
which talks about my creation and my existence. And, you know, how I'm trying to create a race of atomic supermen that will conquer the world and all that, but basically we're just having fun. This is fun for Jim, and I don't get to talk very often, so it's kind of fun for me. I was going to say something and I forgot what it is, so I have to turn the thing off again until I remember. Anyway, I don't know how much time is left on this tape, and I'm just trying to get through it so we can do something else. This may be the last tape we make, because this old tape recorder, it dates back 7 or 8 years. These things become obsolete so quickly. By the time Goblin had read The Music of the Spheres onto a cassette tape, that medium was probably already well on its way out. But we're using what we have. Jim actually didn't want to do some of this. I mean, we wanted to add a little afterword by me to The Music of the Spheres. And you can hear the neighbor's dogs. And I'm surprised Reva isn't joining in. But anyway, so we managed, we dug this thing out, saw that it still does work, sort of. And so we managed to put me on The Music of the Spheres, which we're really happy about. But we wouldn't be surprised if this thing stopped working before too long. Every time we turn it off now, it kind of gives a strange shudder thing. We listen to the tapes on another machine that also is really old and probably won't work too much longer. You can see my voice is starting to kind of fade back into some kind of mumble like Jim does. But on the other hand, I don't have to project anything now because I'm just sort of chimmering away, as we call it. Like I said, Jim didn't want to tape over these tapes. The tapes that we're using for this stuff were bought in 2009 after the economy collapsed, and the government sent everybody a check of stimulus money. Jim spent part of his on some copies of the book Goblinhood 2012, which hadn't been published on the internet yet, so those were the first real copies that had gotten done. And he sent them to some of his correspondents. He writes a lot of letters, Jim does, and so do I. Anyway, he also bought some tapes, so you could still at least buy blank tapes back then. And he was recording off of the radio these shows that he liked, because he doesn't actually like listening to the radio either. He doesn't like any media in particular, the TV, the radio. The TV especially, Jim regards as like some form of brainwashing. And you've got to keep in mind that those shows, even the news, they're put on by people trying to sell products. And those people have spent millions and millions of dollars over something like 60 years to learn how to keep you from changing the channel and get you to buy things you probably don't want, probably don't need. So that's why Jim doesn't watch TV, because he figures they're doing things to his head the whole time. The radio isn't much better, but he used to like to listen to these shows on NPR, and he recorded a bunch of that stuff so he could sit around and listen to that instead of the radio. The radio shows on NPR, they reminded him of a really, really good time in his life. But those tapes are the ones that we got somebody to use to dub The Music of the Spheres. So it's all, and then this one is one of those too. So Jim could listen to the performance and try to figure out what he can fix or whatever. It's all sort of like shamanic self-sacrifice to help with the whole saving the world project, because that just seems to be part of it, where you give up something you care about for something you care about more. Anyway, in Chimstorm, I got to read my own tarot cards, and Goblin had helped, and I got a tarot reading, and one of the things it said about the future was shamanic self-sacrifice in the form of the Hanged Man. And then the next card, the final card, was the Fool, which just kind of shows me constantly starting out on this spiritual journey. That's what the Fool means, sort of, in the tarot. Anyway, this is supposed to be the fun part of the tape, because I get to just sit here and chatter, and that's what Jim likes to listen to, is he just likes to hear his friend Chimera chattering away. Goblinhood also likes to hear that. They're a little bit like a couple of Frankensteins who created not a monster, although the Chimera name usually means some kind of monster in mythology, but my take on it is that all the mythology is wrong, and Chimera is actually a nice thing. It also means something that is hard to pin down, and chimerical, chimerical, whatever, however it's pronounced, a chimerical thought that doesn't really exist somehow. Even the way most thoughts exist, it's like just chasing a dream that's chimerical or chimerical, or however Webster's says to pronounce it. But they wouldn't say it in my nice little voice. Goblinhood worked hard to come up with this voice. But we're getting a whole bunch of weird noise on the tape, so we're going to stop for a minute. Anyway, there's a lot of neighborly talking going on in the backyard, and there were like people yelling to each other across Jim's backyard, so their volume was way up there. We decided to go to another room. There isn't much tape left from what I can see, but this probably isn't going to become the kind of tape where Jim tries to get somebody to make copies of it or whatever. You know, if somebody ever wants to record the poems for real, we'll just do them like digitally or whatever they do now. Use state-of-the-art equipment. The thing is, that probably is never going to happen. So when Jim's gone, this is going to be all that's left of some of those poems to show people how they were supposed to sound. Like I said in my performance thing, he's actually got the music for Citizen Payne written down, but that's the only one that's like that. And you can tell from El Dorado that it's meant to be this bouncy little song or something. It's not, as a poem, it doesn't even make sense. Most of the stuff doesn't make sense in any way, but that's, you know, that's just, Jim's an artist. A lot of it doesn't make sense. Sometimes things make more sense later, like with Van Gogh. But, otherwise, you know, before my voice falls apart completely, I'll just try to say something perky and, cute or something while I use up what's left of this tape. We don't really want to put it off till later because we've got other stuff we're trying to do, like my painting, which I'm looking at right now. I'm trying to decide what I want to do with that. It's so exciting that I'm getting to paint now. I'm like a real artist. This stuff is going to be signed by me and it's going to be all mine. And Jim,
can't wait to see what it looks like. He can't wait to see what I come up with each time.